again, fellow travellers, and welcome to podcast 164 in our series You Should Have Been There with me, Mick Webb.
And me, Simon Calder. And today is all about artificial intelligence. Yes, AI. As you will know, it's a bandwagon these days. The BBC website boasts an article entitled 17 Ways That AI Has Made Us Go Wow. But what is it doing for travellers? Already, we have a guest today, a traveller who has entrusted his own travel plans to an AI guide. He is Michael Motamedi. And Michael, you're joining us today from Barcelona, I gather.
Yes, I am. Thank you, gentlemen, for having me on the show. I really appreciate it.
Hello, Michael. How is it in Barcelona, by the way? Lovely?
It is absolutely lovely. The weather is fantastic. The people are warm and the food is to die for. I mean, as soon as I landed, I started talking to real estate agents.
Oh, yes, but you're not allowed to set down roots, though, are you, anywhere? Because I think that the trip that your AI guide geek is helping you on is a world journey, possibly without any sort of definite endpoint, with your partner and young child.
That is absolutely true. So as much as sometimes you'd like to settle down in my situation, I'm not one to complain, obviously. I live a great life, but we are traveling the world under the guise of Guide Geek. We've relinquished all control, Mick and Simon.
Just before we get going to find out more about your great artificial adventures, Michael, we're just going to catch up with Parish Notices. That's listeners' responses to our recent podcast. And I'd like to start with travel delays and weird reasons and excuses for them. That was the subject of last week's podcast. And this is the cautionary tale of Chris, or is it Christopher Hamblin, who found himself delayed on a journey to Norway from London Gatwick for a pretty bizarre reason indeed, the wrong kind of name.
Yes, my plan was to fly to Stavanger with my wife this morning. Went through the normal procedure, got to the check-in desk. The check-in accepted my passport and my ticket, gave me a boarding pass. When I got to the actual gate, they said, "You can't fly." I said, "Why not?" "Well, because your passport says Christopher Hamblin, and on your ticket it says Chris Hamblin. Although I've always flown as Chris Hamblin, it's my registered name with Norwegian, and I've always used that name, but now suddenly it's no good. So I've got to buy another ticket, which costs £140. I've got to have a stay in a hotel when I get there, because it doesn't get there till midnight, and not really very happy with that.
Well, it sounds as though you've had an extremely stressful day. You've lost an awful lot of money, and all because of six letters.
That's right, yes. My wife, who's disabled, has had to go to the our little hut by herself with my baggage to lug it up half a hill. So, no, it's not very convenient.
Now, the airlines would say, you know what the rules are. Your passport has to match your name exactly. And if you've got a different name on the ticket from your passport, well, that's your problem, and you've got to live with it.
Yes, I can understand that. How it actually happened, I'm registered as Chris Hamblin. I've always flown as Chris Hamblin. When you buy the ticket, it says, "Do you want to log in?" Yes, you log in, and it puts all your details in, which put in Chris Hamblin. I didn't even notice it. But of course, now it's caught up with me all of a sudden.
And so let me get this right. You are a regular traveller on Norwegian to Stavanger, and you have always in the past travelled with the same combination of your name, Chris, your passport saying Christopher.
That's correct, yes.
Was there anybody there who said, actually, you know, this is going to take 2 seconds for us to fix on the computer, so we'll just do that for you now?
No, the lady said, basically, computer says no, because Christopher is five letters more than Chris. And if it was three letters, we could accept it, but not five. You know, it's over the top.
Goodness me. That's a fairly arbitrary reason for not allowing you on the plane.
It is really, yes.
Well, making up the rules as they go along and making money at any cost, maybe saving money at any cost, seems to be the name of the airline game. Michael, I imagine you must have come upon a few delays and odd reasons for them during your journeys.
Yeah, I mean, not as I listened to the podcast last week and or the last one, and I don't have as bizarre as I heard on some of those. But you know, in America, it's an interesting thing that legally, if there's weather delays, they are absolved of all responsibility. And so I've ran into multiple times where they're saying there's a weather problem in Miami, there's a weather problem in LA, and it's like, listen, there is no weather problem in LA, okay, ever. We beg for them over there, okay? So give me my money back, please.
It is really strange, and a lot of British people actually find it difficult to take, because in Europe, as you will know, whatever the cause of a delay, it is the airline's responsibility to get you to your destination, as long as you haven't misspelt your name, and provide hotels and meals until it can do that. Nothing like that in the US, unless it is the airline's fault and you can get them to admit that it's the airline's fault.
I mean, it's definitely a behemoth to go against, right? I mean, I think that's how it is with a lot of these large industries nowadays, right? How can you get on the phone with anybody? You can't. You know, they want you to message them and email them, and it's just, it's a ridiculous thing. And I'm kind of sad about it, to be honest. You know, something as kind of sacred as traveling, you want it to be as good of an experience as possible, but all the rights sit in their hands. I mean, I've seen people kicked off of flights. I've seen people double booked, you know, and I saw people getting kicked out of first class. They paid for first class. But hey, you know, the steward, the flight attendant wants to sit there. So you got to move into the back. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Well, there's a sort of slightly happier subject and a question arising from our podcast number 162 on the subject of the perfect island. And this led to a suggestion from John Wall in this tweet. Hi, Simon and Mick. A contender for the perfect island in the long haul category is Rottnest Island off Perth in Western Australia, where you can snap a selfie with a quokka as well as enjoy the history and natural beauty. Well, thanks, John. And for anyone not familiar with quokkas, they are well up there with the world's most adorable animals. Cat-sized marsupials that can hop like kangaroos, climb trees like koalas, and have what looks like a constant smile on their furry faces at all times, making them an Instagrammable must.
I'm going to put the next question, which was actually tweeted to us, to you, Michael, just in case you can answer it. It's very simple. What should I do in Mykonos?
Well, I have a pretty, maybe controversial answer to that. I personally haven't been to Mykonos. I've been to Greece multiple times. And the only reason why I haven't gone to Mykonos is because of the horror stories of pricing. I mean, I've heard about horror stories of going to restaurants and ordering a couple of drinks and a dish or two and walking out with a $200-$400 bill. Greece is filled with so many beautiful islands and some of the nicest people in the world. A really great option that we visited is Crete, which is a much larger island, and you can travel from one end to another end. Plus, it's only a ferry away from Santorini, which is obviously a very big tourist attraction. But there are other islands like Zakynthos and other type of Greek islands that I think that might be worth it more. But I don't want to speak on Mykonos because I haven't really traveled there myself.
Well, I have been there, Michael, and thank you for your thoughts on that. And I absolutely agree 100% with them. It was big in the early 1990s when it was actually one of the first LGBT-friendly Greek islands. And you've got, for example, Paradise Beach. You've got an upgrade from that, Super Paradise Beach. Mykonos Town, of course, itself. But it's just really silly. So I'm on your side. Unlike our artificial intelligence contributor, this is Dervla, who says that, she's really quite fond of it.
Mykonos is widely regarded as an excellent holiday destination and is immensely popular among tourists. Located in the Cyclades group of islands in Greece, Mykonos offers a mix of stunning landscapes, vibrant nightlife, beautiful beaches, and rich history and culture. Overall, if you enjoy beautiful beaches, vibrant nightlife, picturesque surroundings, and a mix of relaxation and excitement, Mykonos can be an excellent holiday destination for you.
Michael, I should just tell you that Dervla is someone that we've invented based on the AI chatbot ChatGPT, but you've been using a different system, haven't you? A virtual guide called Guide Geek. What is, or should I say, who is Guide Geek exactly? And how do you use him, her, it?
I think it's definitely sexually agnostic, but the but Guide Geek is a travel guide AI, one of the first, I would say. And what's very interesting about it is that even though it's based off of ChatGPT technology, there is some human intervention as well as live updates with flights as well as hotels and up-to-date information versus ChatGPT, not ChatGPT-4, but ChatGPT is, I believe, I don't want to be quoted on this, but 2021 and prior. And so obviously you can imagine when you're utilizing a travel guide in real time, whether that's planning a trip or you're actually there at the destination, you want to have as up-to-date information as possible.
That's a really good introduction to the system that you're using, Michael, but I'm really intrigued why you would entrust you and, with even more concern, your family's six-month trip around the world to an artificial guide when plenty of human advice is available.
That's a really interesting question, Simon. I think it comes down to two very important things. One is being on the forefront of something, right? I truly believe, I don't want to be audacious in any way, but I truly believe that we are the family that's a guinea pig of how AI can transform human traveling, right? And we're literally living it in real time. We're not behind a screen, we're actually using it. And I hope the work that we're doing is not only absolutely amazing and fun, but also some way help individuals, the individuals who are making AI and creating AI, but also just the layman that's who are traveling so they can live off of our own experience. And then two, I think trust is a very powerful word, right? I still think that gut, instinct, common sense come into everything that we do. And I always use this example. I remember the horror stories when Google Maps first came out. I don't know if you guys remember that, but there would be stories about individuals who would drive into lakes or rivers because Google Maps told it to do so. Well, guess what? You got to turn on that common sense every once in a while, right? I mean, we're still at the infancy of this technology. And so we're growing as we go on.
Well, let's find out a bit more about your actual trip. Where has Guide Geek sent you or advised you to go so far? And how's the experience been?
So we've been traveling for the last 18 months full time. But starting about 2 months ago, we basically have been in the hands of Guide Geek. And the first destination it picked was Morocco. And the second destination it picked was Barcelona. And I think it's very important to note that the prompt that you give AI is probably the most important.
Is that the sort of question? Sorry to interrupt. Is that the sort of the question that you ask it?
Exactly, right? And you can be as loose or as, you know, laser focused as you want to be. We're somewhere in the middle. So as you can imagine, when we were leaving to go to prior to picking Morocco, we said, hey, we really want to have some warm weather. We love food and we love markets. And so it picked Morocco for us. And so once it picked Morocco, we asked, and we went forward, okay, what city would you think would be perfect for it? And it recommended four or five cities and we picked Marrakesh. And then because we stay in one location for 1 month at a time, we thought maybe Marrakesh for 1 month would be too long. We asked, what would be another great city for us to split up our trip? And it recommended Fez. And so we were able to kind of experience both cities in Morocco. And it was fantastic. It was absolutely fantastic. And now,
was that because, sorry, Michael, was it, did it choose those two cities because they were contrasting, or was there another reason for it, do you think?
I think it was, in a sense, I think it was a little bit learning who we were as well, right? At the end of the day, we're very into food. We're very into culture, right? So we don't like to go anywhere that's resorty type vibes, right? We like to go and embed ourselves with the people and understand what the country is about. And I think that's why I recommended those two cities.
But does that suggest, Michael, that AI will actually kind of do a debrief and say, well, what did you think about that then, guys? And do you feed back to improve its this hopefully virtuous loop where it gradually refines where you should be directed to next?
Yes and no. I think when you're in the middle of a specific conversation with GuideGeek, it's definitely learning you as you go on. I don't think it's at the point where I come back a month later and it's like, oh, Michael, you're back. So we really think you should go here. I don't think the technology is there yet. So we keep re-prompting it and re-asking the similar questions to ensure that, you know, we're going somewhere that we like and we feel safe. You know, there's a lot of, I mean, when we travel, right, what do we think about, right? Weather, safety, experiences, food, water or not, right? Oceans or seas. And so these are all things that you want to have a conversation with GuideGeek about, right? It's not necessarily about just letting it pick somewhere random and following it blindly. It's more about having a conversation with GuideGeek the same way you would have with a travel guide. Treat it like a human being and treat it like, you know, the best way to describe it is like almost like having a local inside of your pocket, right? Especially when you arrive at a location. Yeah. The difference is I don't have to buy GuideGeek any drinks.
Because I go hiking quite often with Mick, but you're actually making AI sound and GuideGeek in particular sound a more attractive companion, frankly.
Well, I think GuideGeek probably knows north from south on a compass, Simon. But anyway, let's not go there.
I'm just intrigued. I mean, GuideGeek presumably knows exactly where you are. And does that mean that you could be walking through the old town of Barcelona and say, so where's the best coffee round here? And you would be directed to it.
I think you'd still have to put in the location that you are. I don't think it's synced with my Google Maps just yet. But it's still very intuitive in the sense that, yeah, I'm in the Gothic Quarter, right? I'm in Born. I'm in, you know, El Raval. Where should I go? Right. I even entrusted it in Morocco for my everywhere we go, I get a haircut, and I let the barber do whatever he or she wants. And this last time in Marrakesh, I asked, you know, where's the best barber, and it took me through the streets in the Medina of Marrakesh, and I ended up finding this barber that I was literally in his home, and he was giving me a haircut. You know, I think that this is probably the most important thing, guys, that. I want to relay to everyone that I speak to. I personally believe that artificial intelligence, just like a lot of most technologies, we should be figuring out ways to allow it to make us get closer to humans, not farther apart, right? And I think when people think about AI, they think about eliminating human interaction and the sense of fear comes over them. And what I'm trying to show is that, no, that's not necessarily the case. AI is a tool to help us get closer to one another. It's just shortening my Google searches. It's allowing me to trust something out there that I don't necessarily need to trust a stranger with. But as soon as I arrive at the restaurant, the coffee shop, the bar, the barber, whatever it may be, that phone goes back in my pocket. And I'm having a real connection with that human being.
Yeah. Do you use GuideGeek for... the actual nuts and bolts of the traveling. Could you say to GuideGeek, can you find me the best 2-star hotel or the best B&B or the best Airbnb in, Barcelona or wherever.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's the beautiful thing about GuideGeek. Now, with our specific situation, because we spend, you know, 1 month at a time, we're usually utilizing maybe an Airbnb or a long-term stay agency. So that doesn't really help us as much. But for flights, and if you're going to be staying in hotels, yes, you can. And it's fantastic.
I wonder, though, about coping with the stuff that just happens when you're traveling. So you get a cancelled flight or a cancelled train. Can you then just say, help? And will you get any?
I don't think you're going to get any help with the specific airline. But hey, find me a new flight. Yes. Right. And again, I think it's very important to note, gentlemen, that we are still on the forefront of this, right? I think as human beings, we always want to say, well, it didn't do this, and it didn't do that, and it was wrong about this. Well, it's okay. So are you.
No, I see what you mean. But have you had any bad pieces of advice, as it were, that a bit like that Google Maps reference from the early days that you gave us? Yeah. Have you had any experiences when actually it really didn't go so well, and instead of the barbers, you sort of ended up in a supermarket or something, and something that you will feed back to the makers of it?
Yeah, I mean, you know what? I've had long conversations with the makers of it, and they've been very transparent about the fact that there are going to be flaws, right? And I think that's commendable, in my opinion, right? Instead of coming out and saying, hey, this thing is perfect. If you think it's wrong, you're wrong. It's more about, hey, this is about a learning experience that everyone is going through right now. And we've seen some, I guess you would say, false information, right? Especially sometimes when it comes from a historical standpoint, right? It's pulling information from the internet, right? You can read the wrong article and it can be wrong, right? And so it's doing similar things. But I think if you're kind of aware and you're conscious of, hey, there's a possibility this might not be perfect, then I think your experience is going to be a lot better, right? I mean, imagine you're having a conversation with a travel guide or a local, and they have their own opinions on things, right? They might be wrong as well too. So it's really going back to the fact that saying, hey, if you do want to take the leap with AI while you travel, just be a little aware. Right. And I personally, not to ramble on, but I personally think that being aware when you travel with or without AI is probably the most important tool that you can have, right? Awareness.
Now, what you're doing, Michael, of course, would suit, I'm guessing, about 0.0001% of our lovely listeners, and they are more avid travelers than most, I need to say. But you are a digital nomad, influencer, anyway, a very special kind of traveler.
Yeah, I mean, I don't get me wrong. I've worked very, very hard in my life to get to where I am. But there was a point in about a couple of years ago when my daughter was born and my dad was retiring. It was simultaneously. And I was seeing these two cycles of life happening at the same exact time. And what I realized was that I am in a luxurious position to be able to go and travel and work from abroad. And it might mean less money in my bank account, but I don't think anyone looked back on their life and said, I travel too much, if that makes sense.
Yeah, very good. And beg your pardon.
I just wanted to piggyback on the prompt thing because I think it's important. Like, you know, one of the questions that people ask, like, what do you ask GuideGeek and what sort of answers do you get? You can utilize GuideGeek to ask very simple questions like what's the best restaurant or the best coffee house or the best barber, just like you would ask traditionally either a travel guide or Google. But we're experimenting with things that are just out of this world, guys. Most recently, we've tried to turn artificial intelligence on its head and really utilize it in a way that I wouldn't be able to utilize a guide or an actual human being. And so the last couple of videos that we produced was, imagine you're Anthony Bourdain. You just arrived in Barcelona. What do you do? Right? Yeah. And so now I'm like vicariously living through Anthony Bourdain, and it's utilizing information. any public information from all of his shows, his books and his writings and his blogs and his articles to guide me in the right direction. And the video after that, we actually did Picasso. Okay. Picasso is obviously very, very known in Barcelona and Spain. And I said, hey, if imagine you're Pablo Picasso, where would you grab a drink? And guess what? It took me to a bar that I would have passed by a million times over.
Was that the Four Cats or something like that?
The Four Cats. Yeah. And I sat in Pablo Picasso's seat and I had the same drink that he had. Right. I mean, another prompt that we were giving it was one of my all time favorite movies, Vicky Cristina Barcelona, with Scarlett Johansson and Javier Bardem. And we prompted it to say, take us to the sites in Barcelona where the film was actually filmed. I mean, it's fascinating, guys.
Okay, but that's a really important point, Michael, because I dare say that if I Googled the right question, I would get pretty much the same answer. I could even get a decent guidebook and they might tell me. So I'm just really interested in how Guide Geek it presents you with something rather different than what I guess have become our traditional sources, you know, searching online or looking up in a book for those of us born in the 20th century, at least.
That is a great question, right? And we've done experiments on both. And sometimes we see GuideGeek give us answers that Google, I'd have to search hours to get, right? And sometimes I'll Google something and it'll give me the same exact answer. I think the question really here is the ease of it. Right, gentlemen, right? The fact that you can just grab your phone, go into your WhatsApp and have a conversation with something that will give you the same answer that you would do if you were to go onto Google, type it in, research it, read an article, read a book, right? Yes. So, and I think that's the balance that I think we're all looking for. You know, there are things that we don't ask GuideGeek as well, right? Like I'm a sushi snob. I grew up in Los Angeles. Actually, I grew up in the Valley and, you know, Ventura Boulevard is the number one concentrated spot for sushi restaurants outside of Japan. And so when I want to eat sushi, I really want to look at images and I want to research and I want to see multiple restaurants. So I might not go to GuideGeek and say, hey, give me the best sushi restaurant, if that makes sense.
Well, look, Michael, that is intriguing, but I'm afraid we must leave it there. So thank you so much for your time and your words. And we wish you all the best on your continuing journey. And do keep in touch and let us know how you're doing, if you'd like to. Simon and I are going to have a week off, but then we hope to be welcoming back our philosopher traveller, Emily Thomas, to talk about travel cliches and cliched travel, something that Dervla, our AI reporter, is particularly good at, I'd say.
I just wonder, just before you go, Michael, have you got a favourite travel cliche or one which really jars with you when you hear it?
Yeah, I mean, I think I do. I don't know if it's considered a cliche, you know, especially in America, people are very are scared to travel outside of their boxes, right? And so the biggest question, the biggest cliche I always get, are you safe? Is it safe?
Oh, really?
You know, and what's really interesting, not to get too controversial about it, but when we traveled to Mexico City a couple of months ago, we were there for a month, and I think there wasn't one person who said, are you safe? Is everyone okay? Right. And I was, and it was an absolute beautiful city, and I fell in love with the people. And I came back to the US, not even 4 days into the US, I won't name the city, but there was a mass shooting 2 blocks away from where I was. But nobody asked me if I was safe if I was in that city.
and there's of course always the great cliche, which I think would work for pretty much wherever you are, Michael, which is just X city of contrasts, or indeed island of contrasts or nation of contrasts. But thank you very much indeed for your wisdom and your contrasts and your insights today. Of course, listeners, do get in touch with any experiences you've had with AI in travel, and also your tales of bizarre delays, perfect islands, of contrast, and any other topics that have tickled your fancies from our extensive back catalogue of podcasts. You can reach us on Twitter at YouShouldHaveBT or leave us an audio message at anchor.fm/YouShouldHaveBeenThere. But for now, from me, Simon Calder.
And me, Mick Webb. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
And me, Michael Motamedi. Goodbye.